The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
We're gone.
Contreras absolutely mashes one way out of here, and the Cubs lead 1-0. Yikes.
Obliterated that baseball.
Middays on the Score.
Yeah, baseball was back. You heard the sounds. You saw the things. Well, most of you saw the things.
A lot of you.
I did. I was perfectly pleased. The top of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join the Wildcats at Welsh Ryan Arena this Thursday when they host Illinois at 7 p.m. Tickets on sale now at nusports.com. Jim DeShays is on Twitter at Jim DeShays. And the Cubs TV analyst joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. So how went the maiden voyage, JD?
Very good. It was fun. You know, we're settling in for the long haul now. We're doing every one of these spring training games. But the first game on Marquee Network was a heck of a lot of fun. Mark Grace came in and yucked it up for three innings. We had it was kind of like doing a talk show. We had a lot of company with baseball as a backdrop. But that's how it should have been.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the broadcast. I love the way you guys fit Mark Grace into the conversation. I wonder about a three-man broadcast during the season. Do you think it will be as conversational as Saturday's game was? I mean, obviously spring training and the regular season and then the postseason, hopefully for the Cubs, carry very different needs on a broadcast.
Yeah, I think during the regular season you have to honor the play on the field a little bit more than you do in spring training. So you have to find that blend between, you know, just having this conversation up in the booth and I think, you know, there's a point where people get tired of us talking about our days back in the day. So you got to focus more on what's going on in the playing field during the regular season. But conversational is always the goal for me. I think every broadcast works better when it sounds like it's two or three guys, you know, hanging around in their living room watching a ball game.
When it comes to how you do your job with the experience that you and Len have had with various trucks and various outlets and people trying to figure out who's producing the game and where it's going to be broadcast, what actually has been an adjustment for you? What are you working on? What are you smoothing out from your end?
Just new people, getting to know new people. I think that the advantage will be is we will have more consistency because we'll be on one network all the time. So we'll be working with the same people, same core people, home and road, pretty much the whole season. You know, people are going to take a vacation from time to time, but by and large, over the long haul, it's going to be the same group. So I think we'll have consistency in that regard. Beyond that, I don't think it's going to be all that challenging. You know, the times we do have the third guy in the booth, that'll create a little bit different feel and something I haven't done a lot of, but I'm looking forward to it. I think we're going to have a lot of fun with it. And then, you know, all the other bells and whistles will get created as well. And I think some of it, you know, fans are really going to love. You know, baseball is a subjective business, whether it's the guy talking or the camera angles and all the other things we show you. Some people will think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Other folks, maybe not so much. But, you know, we'll kind of, you know, go along through the process. And if something's not working, we'll tweak it.
Did you have wish list kind of stuff? Like when you were talking about, you know, moving things around on a brand new network, were there things that Jim DeShays really wanted to get done on a broadcast? I wonder how much you had input here.
No, I'm very passive when it comes to those kinds of things. I just show up for work. Hey, what do you guys want to do? We want to do this. Okay. I mean, if I get to the point where something we're doing I don't like, I will voice my opinion. But I'm kind of willing to try anything.
You and Len have done a really good job of incorporating data. And I'm loath to say modern metrics because I think most of the new stuff is just measurement. It's just angles and velocities and spin rates and such. Is that commitment going to remain? Or is the equipment, the technology going to be there, especially for the regular season games for you to incorporate instead of just saying, hey, he's got good late carry on the fastball, to say, hey, look, this is the actual spin rate that's causing the good late carry on the fastball?
Yeah, I know we're going to use all the StatCast stuff, and the goal is always to show it in a meaningful way. I think it's important to provide context. I think sometimes in broadcasting we'll throw a number up there and say, man, look at his spin rate or his arm strength from right field, whatever it is such and such. And if you're not showing how it compares to league average or how far better it is than league average, then you're not really providing any meaningful information. I don't know how far along StatCast is in terms of spin rate and things like that in terms of putting it graphically into a broadcast. There would be others that are qualified to speak to that than me. But if it tells a story, I think you should use it. If a guy has, you know, a spin rate that's 20% better than league average, then that's a story. So we'll definitely go there. You know, Len and I, we believe in all that stuff. It's just finding the way to use it best is what really matters.
JD, I was pretty stunned that Chris Bryant wasn't traded over the offseason. I really thought that was going to be the focus for the front office, and it was going to be part of a real big change for the Cubs in 2020. He's there, and he has made his presence known with authority, really. I mean, he's talked quite a bit about a good number of things. I think a lot of people who are close to him have said, yes, this is just Chris Bryant saying the things we've heard him say out loud. Some have said this is kind of a more assertive Chris Bryant toward things. How do you come down on how he has arrived here in camp?
Yeah, I think you know, his name was out there for, you know, with trade rumors, speculation that he didn't really want to be here when he became a free agent. I think he wanted to address that and say, wait a minute, I never said I didn't want to be in Chicago. He's such an earnest guy. He's such a nice guy. I think he got to a point where he just wanted to make sure his position was out there in front of everybody in Chicago, that he wants to remain a Cub. So I'm not shocked that he's still here. I would not have been shocked had he been dealt, and we don't know what the future holds. I think a lot will depend on how well we play first half of the season, obviously. But that's the great thing about Chris. He's a good quote, right? He doesn't, you know, he tells you what he's thinking. He's a thoughtful guy. So I'm glad he's here. I think he's a great player, and I'm really curious to see how this thing with Brian, the leadoff role, is going to play out.
Early impressions of a David Ross camp. What's standing out to you as different, either by look or feel?
Rossi being on the injured list right now with the flu or whatever it is he's battling, I haven't had a chance to talk to him a whole lot, a little bit the first couple of days I was down here. So most of what I'm getting is secondhand, and it's probably nothing that you guys haven't heard anywhere else. He's real passionate. He's more of a rah-rah guy. Brings a lot of energy every day. He's promising more structure. I don't sense a whole lot different in the way camp is being run. But I think he's going to put his imprint on this team, and I think it's going to be, as it was as a backup catcher, he's going to be a cheerleader, and he's also going to be an in-your-face guy if needs be. The challenge for him and any new manager is just the pace of the game. You know, once the games get going, every new manager I've ever talked to said, as much baseball as I've watched and played, been around, even coached, until you're in that manager seat and you're in charge of making decisions, we all talk about the slow pace of the game. For a manager, it gets on him in a hurry. So that's going to be the big challenge, is just, you know, settling in and being able to make quick decisions on the fly.
Will David Ross be fined in Kangaroo Court for missing his managerial debut because of flu? Will the guys take him to the wallet for that?
I don't know if they're going to do a Kangaroo Court, but he's going to get a lot of grief. Yeah, they're going to pile on, I suspect, yeah.
When we look at the pitching that is going to be so important for this team, obviously there's a lot of questions of who's going to fit in the bullpen and how. And you guys had Tommy Hotovy on the broadcast Saturday, had a good long conversation. But Adbert Alzola is going to get the start today. What's the word around this young man as it goes into his first start of spring?
Yeah, I guess the question is, does Alzola become a bullpen guy, or do you want him as a depth starting down in AAA? Is, you know, with the assumption being that Tyler Chatwood settles into that fifth spot in the rotation. So I think a lot will depend on what they see from Alzola in terms of the command of his secondary pitches. He's talking a lot about his changeup. They've got so many arms out there. All these big right-handers that throw 96, 97 miles per hour do not have a lot of major league experience. They've kind of been bubble guys. So that's going to be kind of intriguing to see how that all sorts out. I just don't know. I don't know if they like Alzola in the bullpen or if they prefer to have him starting down at AAA, ready to come in and step into the rotation should somebody struggle or get hurt.
Have you noticed the communication is in any way different or reshaped with this new structure? Because I'm really intrigued with the number of changes, the number of new faces throughout the organization, and some forward-facing, you know, with coaches and development people, of where and when and how some of this communication occurs. Does any of that look different to you?
No, and I haven't, you know, been around this group long enough to get a real feel for that. I rolled into town Wednesday, and we started doing broadcasts, and the workout schedule is such that if there are, you know, if the team's on the road, Len and I just show up here at the ballpark, they'll do their work at home and come over here and play the game. So I'm not getting an opportunity to talk to a lot of people yet. But I'm with you. I'm curious to see, you know, what changes are made and how, if the message gets delivered in a different way. I know they brought in some progressive guys, but, you know, the coaches they brought in from the Phillies organization slot into that. Andy Green, I think, is kind of a progressive guy with his approach to the game. But I honestly don't know.
Back to the broadcast thing for just a second, JD. I think it's hilarious that we've been doing this for the better part of 50 years, that guys like you and Len will have the changes in spring training, and no one seems to care to get you the names of the players that are going in, and everybody seems fine with it at the same time, and they just trust the broadcast to lean on their own sense of humor about not knowing who the hell is in the game late. And I find it fantastic, and I love that about spring training, nobody seems to care to employ new methods to get you the names of these random minor leaguers going in, and I hope it never changes, and I hope it's something the Marquee Network continues to do, because I think it's just fun.
Well, yeah, the problem is usually you get a printed roster who's here from the visiting club. From the home club, you'll get a roster of guys that are expected to be in the game, but there's always kids that come over from the minor league camp that they're not on a sheet anywhere. You can't find them in a media guide, even if you tried. It would take you half an hour, and by the time you found it, they'd be out of the game.
Right.
My favorite was years ago when I was working in Houston. We were playing the Cardinals on St. Patrick's Day, and the Cardinals brought in, you know, a couple kids, you know, 96 and 94 or whatever. Mm-hmm. We couldn't find their names anywhere. You try to find it, because a lot of times it's a local kid, or there's some story that you want to be able to hook into. But we couldn't find these kids anywhere. So, you know, they became Seamus O'Malley and, you know, Tommy Mick something. You know, we just, every Irish name we could come up with, we just pinned on these kids because it was St. Patrick's Day.
You know, we got in trouble, Jim, in the minors when I was working for the Rockford Royals in the Midwest League, and Mike Gerchley was our manager, just a major loon. He's a longtime third base coach now for the Royals, and his son is actually a rising star of the White Sox organization. Yeah. But at one point, a pitcher came in, and we had just gotten him, and the official score didn't know who it was. So we sent somebody to run down there, and Gerchley made up a name. Like, I don't know if he didn't know the kid's name or who he was. You're like, oh, yeah, that's Kapitsky. And the name got written in with no first name, and it got reported officially. So there was a fake player who didn't exist that was in the Elias system, who was in, like, the actual annals of professional baseball, who didn't exist. And then they had to go back and sort of do it forensically to figure out who the actual pitcher was. And it was we kind of got a wrist slap for it from professional baseball.
Oh, really? Oh, that's so good. Yeah, it's Kapinski.
Right. It's like, who's he? Like, I don't know. So they wrote it down.
It's like that new rodeo guy, Mason Saunders.
We're going to get to him. It's funny you bring up Mason Saunders, because, wow, see, you read our minds.
Jeez.
Mason Saunders, and because people have never heard of Mason Saunders, it's an incredible story. So we're planning on sort of keeping that mysterious and getting to it in a moment. Also, how's the Marquee swag? Because I know for these broadcasts, especially as the weather changes, you have the polo shirt, and then you're going to need the quarter zip, and maybe you're going to need a little warmer coat. Who's in charge of getting you the new stuff?
They're good, man. The marketing department over there is great. We've been hooked up with multi-colors of polos. We've got pullovers for these cooler days. So we're good.
Okay.
It looks good. It looks sharp.
You got uniforms and everything.
Yeah.
If you know anybody, maybe you can score a couple.
Mm-hmm. Just might.
We'll have to put in a text or two. JD, thanks so much, man. Really appreciate it.
Hi, guys. Great to be with you.
That is Jim Deshaies, the television analyst for the Cubs on Marquee Network.
The reason I brought it up, I was watching Saturday's broadcast, and I don't know when it was late in the game, and some, you know, the A's throwing some pinch runner, and Len's looking through, and you can hear the paper kind of shuffle.
Right, sure.
He's like, pinch running for the A's. JD just goes, that guy. He was just that guy for the rest of the game. And I think it's so much fun.
Well, we did that years ago when Jason Goff and I were hosting, and the Cubs were playing against the Dodgers. I think it was the Dodgers. I don't remember who they're playing with. And we started doing just random play-by-play when we wanted to.
Yeah, of course.
Just sort of looking at and seeing.
Of course.
And it was exactly like that, because it's late in the game, and you hear the crack of the bat, and you're like, a slow black guy is rounding third and headed for home.
You get the random minor leaguer that comes in, and you know he knocks one into the gap and looks like he's never seen second base before. Mm-hmm. Like here at this field, they've moved second base. It's not where it was last week. It's very strange.
Johnny Most, remember the longtime Celtics broadcaster, Johnny Most, was doing an exhibition game of some kind where they were playing an international team, and he was like, the lefty, back to the little guy, and now it's over to Obradovich or something. I'm in trouble with the names again.
Nobody cares.
It was my bad dream.
Nobody cares.
It was the play-by-play.
You can't see anything?
It was the play-by-play failure dream, and it was happening in real time. The segment is brought to you by Indeed. Indeed is used by over 3 million businesses for hiring, where business owners and HR professionals can post job openings with screener questions, then sort, review, and communicate with candidates from an online dashboard. Learn more at indeed.com/hire. And indeed, it was Jim Deshaies doing our job, mentioning what we were getting to next. There's a rodeo performer, a calf roping expert named Mason Saunders. You may not think you know him, but you know him.
That's tease and a half. And no less than JD knew about it, too. So we'll get to that. We also got some sound from the NBA's G League that you just have to hear. It's Bernstein and McKnight on an extended dance mix, 670 The Score.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join the Wildcats at Welsh Ryan Arena this Thursday when they host Illinois at 7 p.m. Tickets on sale now at nusports.com. We have a Blackhawks trade, and The Score's Jay Zawoski can tell you all about the details.
I don't have all the details yet.
Well,
but,
then what the hell, man?
Not all, a lot of the details.
Defenseman Erik Gustafsson looks like he's been traded to Calgary for conditional draft picks.
Okay.
So that's exciting.
How the big question is it Calgary or Calgary?
Oh, it's definitely Calgary.
They call it Calgary. Right.
Yeah. Who's they?
The people of Calgary.
What do you mean, you people?
We call it Calgary, but they, when in Canada, they refer to it as Calgary.
Still 34 minutes to go on the NHL's trade deadline. And so, generally speaking, Jay, the rumors, at least, if we've been looking at, not a whole lot as it comes to the Blackhawks.
No, they have not been out there a lot. That's not abnormal for the Hawks. Usually they sort of operate under the darkness of bad puns, or what am I trying to say? I don't know.
I don't know.
I got twisted in my own words.
Okay. Ask Vincent Goodwill.
Let's roll that back.
They play it close to the vest. How's that? Is that a better cliche for you?
Mm-hmm. Can't be worse.
So things can kind of pop out when you don't expect them to, like the Andrew Shaw trade, like the Robin Leonard signing. They don't usually get caught up in rumors. So they may not be done, but from what I understand, like we talked about earlier, Carolina and other teams interested in Robin Leonard are not offering enough for the Hawks' liking, but he's a free agent. He could walk away for nothing. So I don't know. That's the balance. Do you trade him just to trade him, or do you try to re-sign him this summer? I don't know.
Yep, we'll find out.
Now, yes, we will.
I teased you by mentioning a rodeo performer,
yeah,
competitor named Mason Saunders, who actually has been pretty successful, has won some money in some of these side circuit rodeos, most recently $26,560 with his partner Jackson, with an X, of course, Tucker. And Mason Saunders is standing, and he looks familiar, even though he looks like a rodeo guy, because he's got his flannel shirt on and his giant belt buckle and his Wrangler jeans.
And the hat, the trucker hat.
And the trucker hat.
Completes the ensemble.
What they do, this is tandem calf roping, where one guy ropes the head of the steer, or steer roping, and the other the back legs. This is a very specific competition. And the more you read about this and you see the fact, okay, wait, I know who that is. I know who Mason Saunders is. And that's because It's Madison Bumgarner.
This is amazing.
Of the Arizona Diamondbacks. And he does this. And it's been in plain sight for a while. He hasn't really hidden it. But he's had a bunch of different partners for the steer roping. And apparently there's video of him practicing roping on a statue of a bull and on Jeremy Affeldt's patio furniture. He ropes right-handed. He's like, you know, he's on a horse too. Yeah, I gotta know this. He's riding.
Yeah.
You don't just like run up to the thing and rope, but he rides a horse and he competes at this and he's good at it.
How dangerous is tandem steer roping?
I
assume that all of the rodeo events have the G removed from it and are just it's steer roping, not steer roping.
I don't think it's particularly dangerous. The steer isn't, you're not riding the steer. It's not bull riding.
Well, so I've been to a rodeo. And my dad wanted to go. He's a big rodeo fan. You know, he'd stay up late and watch rodeo as it came on, and he got really interested in it. So I went for his birthday. We took him to a rodeo. And some of these, you know, you're riding around, you rope the steer, and then you have to go up to the steer as it's upside down and rope off the legs together in
hunt
a
tight,
final
yeah,
move,
yeah.
Whatever that is.
Yeah, I think they do that.
Is that in tandem roping?
I don't know. I've seen it done before where there's a special way you do it and you tie up the legs and then you're done.
So Bumgarner, as I read this, Bumgarner lassos right-handed but pitches left-handed.
Yes.
Okay. But that makes sense to me.
So why Mason Saunders? The last name is the maiden name of his wife. Mason is a shortened version of Madison. He said, it's something for my wife to call me when we're out in public to keep people from recognizing me. He said, but you're going to ruin that for me because he was all mad. But he says that part of the reason he's enjoying Arizona is the number of like minor league rodeos that are around there for him to sort of pick up an extra check. But he said the media didn't know until now. He said, people in baseball, everybody knows about it. Said there's been hundreds and hundreds of roping partners, and it's been less than cloak and daggers. The Athletics reporting, we said nobody's known until now, but Mason Saunders, star calf roper, is Madison Bumgarner. We were trying to think of a comp.
Well, here's the thing first. Bumgarner derailed his career, at least it felt like for a little bit, in a really bad motorbike accident, right?
Dirt bike,
he was dirt
right?
biking and went over the handlebars and landed on his left shoulder.
Yes.
And that kept him out for a while. I remember the press conference. I remember how mad he was, how contrite, I guess, he was that he was doing something like this.
Because that's in pretty standard boilerplate contract language.
I would imagine.
That's a no-no unless you have a special carve-out.
But if you think
like
back
love of the game clause.
If you think back to Aaron Boone, remember, I mean, he's the reason Aaron Boone streetballing his pickup basketball is the reason the Yankees ended up with Alex Rodriguez in the first place. So that was the first domino that fell. He busted his knee playing pickup hoops. He's a big-time pickup hoop guy, which apparently was in his contract. He played anyway, and you got Alex Rodriguez to the Yankees.
Here's a comp. This is from the 608, who said, the Mason Saunders Madison Bumgarner is very similar to Formula One driver and champion Kimi Räikkönen. He competed in rallycross and snowmobile racing under the pseudonym Gunnar Gunnarsson. Said his F1 team Ferrari was not impressed, and he didn't care. So the interviews are hilarious.
Like interviewing as different people?
As Gunnar Gunnarsson? That's pretty... Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I know there's always been some crossover that... It just hasn't gotten to like a professional competitive level unless you talk about some of these pro-am golfers like
right.
Rick Roden back in the day and Tony Romo.
Tony Romo's really... Yeah.
The guys a lot of them happen to be really good at golf. But it's not quite this exotic, right? Roy Oswalt
was danger in here. There's a live animal that doesn't want to get roped.
Yeah, Roy Oswalt was prevented from catfish noodling. Remember, he was hand grabbing for flathead catfish, and they told him he couldn't do that.
You just stick your hand in, and then they hope the catfish bites it and pull
correct.
It out?
Correct. You stick it in blindly into these mud holes in the side of the river. The problem is, sometimes it's an alligator snapping turtle.
With the teeth?
No, it's not teeth. It's just the jaw.
Oh, I thought you meant like an actual alligator.
No, it's an alligator snapper.
Oh,
they grow as big as like 180 pounds.
That's big.
Yeah, alligator snappers are big, and once they close their mouth, you don't have a hand.
Ah, well, no, you
hard
can't
to
do
pitch.
That. Can't
without,
do that.
Hard to pitch without a hand.
You know,
pitching arm.
You won't remember this, but I was once at the ballpark and was in charge of getting Roy Oswalt on the phone with you and Terry.
Maybe that was the interview.
Well, he had both hands, so it was had to have been after they'd stopped
that's
him.
That's when he'd gotten his backhoe. Remember, he had a bonus in his contract. He got the bulldozer because he wanted to make a lake.
Correct. Yeah. You guys spent an enormous amount of time talking about that. He was on the phone talking about a tractor.
Yes.
And I'm standing there next to him at what was then U.S. Cellular Field, now Guaranteed Rate. And all I'm hearing is a man, Roy Oswalt, talking about a tractor. And I was worrying the entire time that he wasn't on the air with you guys. And like a Batacola was just making small talk with him about a tractor or something. And I'm going, oh my God, he's going to yell at me after this.
This texter says, I am extremely disappointed to learn that Connor's first job out of college wasn't rodeo clown.
Nope, was not a rodeo clown. Never had the athleticism for that. You got to be kind of crazy to be a rodeo clown, by the way.
Uh-huh.
That's you're putting yourself in the business end of a big, mean animal.
I'm picturing Jim Boylan as a rodeo clown in full getup with a timeout
with a pregame talk.
Yeah.
With a pregame talk to all his fellow rodeo clowns.
847 suggests Mookie Betts bowling on the PBA Tour. Said he does not change his name.
That's true. A lot less danger in that, I would imagine, unless you run across a Weber who just wants to take you down or something like that, right? One of the angry, is it Pete Weber?
Yeah,
very angry.
The double crotch
Who
chop
do you think
move?
You are? Right. I am. Like right. That whole yeah. deal. I mean, that's... Although, when's the last time you bowled?
I'm sore thinking about it.
My elbow gets all kind of screamy.
Yeah, you can get like ulnar collateral ligament
pain.
It's
UCL stuff. Yeah. And every time you go and you're walking away going, oh, that wasn't so bad. I bowled or whatever. And the next morning you wake up and your elbow's like three sizes larger.
I was complaining about carrying my bag for 18 holes.
You didn't have the push cart or pull cart.
Pull cart,
either one.
Push cart. Everyone says I'm doing it wrong. Of course, because I pull it instead of push it. No, Bruce, you're supposed to push it because it's easier. Whatever, fine. Yeah, Mookie Betts does. He has bowled semi-professionally or professionally before.
He's really good, right?
Pro bowler.
Still one of my favorite things.
I'm trying to think of some of these crossovers where you compete. Like, is there anybody who's a good enough fisherman to be like a satellite tour bass fisherman guy? There has to be.
What does it take to be one of those guys?
You seriously want to know?
Just being out there, right?
No.
You got to,
first of all, you need, your equipment has to be impeccable.
These guys could do it. They got the money.
The really fast boat to beat people to the spots.
Okay.
You have to know the exact lure for the conditions. You have to be half meteorologist and knowing memorizing the topography of a lake like it's your defense card in your hat. And just knowing it's this temperature, the wind is coming out of this direction, there's this much sunlight, I have to present. It's the same stuff that all fishermen do, but you're doing it for your livelihood, and you have to find the market inefficiencies so you know something your competitors don't.
Okay, so I don't mean to disparage big game fishing or whatever, but all of that sounds like there's no God-given talent in that, it sounds like. It's you know, there's none of this God reached down and made your right arm into a thunderbolt
some guys can smell it.
It's acquired knowledge, some of that stuff, right?
No, some of that's innate. Some of it is being able to feel sure. You know, that's why, and I was always amazed that I was having a conversation with one of our guides up in Canada when you talked to the indigenous Cree that he was making fun of. He was like, yeah, we're the fish people. That's who we are.
Really?
We're the fish Indians. I said, what do you mean? He said, we're just good at it. And I said, is it just a function of experience? Of course, I'm trying to Bernstein the whole thing.
Right, exactly.
And like, is it just a function of this is handed down over the years, and your brother did it, and your uncle did it, and you did this, and you're this, and you're a fisherman and a trapper, and the whole thing is? He said, probably, but he said, we're also just really good at waking up in the morning and smelling the air and knowing a lake and just feeling where they're going to be.
Did you, Terry?
I said, I got to see the metrics on that.
Did you and Terry have Willie Young on the show in camp? Was he a
fisherman?
Big fisher?
His sack dances were all a separate fishing technique.
Was he a pro?
No, just an avid fisherman.
Avid, okay.
But I love trying to discern, and I would call him, like, were you drop-shotting after a sack? And he said, yep, I was drop-shotting. Like, yes, I knew it. Difficult technique to learn, but once you master it, it is a thing.
There you go.
Yeah, but that's the Madison Bumgarner rodeo is up there for him to say, like, okay, I'm good enough at this that I want to actually go to rodeos with a partner and compete at it.
With many partners. Like, this was his love. And it didn't matter who was alongside him doing that tandem roping. He just needed to be out there roping.
I'd like to find ones that aren't. See, this works almost too well because you can picture him doing it. It would be better. What did you say? Kyle Hendricks is like a blood sports fighter.
We're going to find out that Kyle Hendricks is going over to Singapore and doing some illegal blood sport fighting.
Yeah, he's coating his hands with the shattered glass and stuff.
just real. He's going to do a real quiet interview with Sahadev of The Athletic. Like, yeah, I killed a man once. It was, you know, I mean, he. It is what it is. When you're out there, you got to take your swings.
It's part of it. It happens. Yeah, just trying to think of really, really incongruous things, or like some blithering idiot is a mathlete,
right?
Like, who competes in like high level problem solving tournaments at MIT.
Kyle Schwarber was a member of the a cappella choir, right?
Both
high school, and did he do some of it at IU, or was it just all at high school?
I also think it was a bit at their high school. Like, I don't.
No,
think...
that is not the. I talked to him once about.
Okay,
it.
Okay, he did it because he wanted to, or is that just like a thing there that they get their rough, tough football players
with
dance and sing?
It was not, as far as I understand, it was not one of those. Oh, the senior football players want to come out there and just make a joke out of this. This was, I believe, it was. He was into it. He was part of the team.
Have you noticed that with Fat Tuesday coming tomorrow, people have dropped off punchkies and king cake? And,
yes,
it's Fat. It's I don't know what the Monday is. I know it's Fat Tuesday. It's Ash Wednesday and
Massive Monday. I don't know.
Whatever.
Don't know.
That is one fine king cake.
It's so doughy. It's very choice.
It's like a little underdone.
Yep.
So it's toothsome.
I want that.
I keep circling it and grazing at it, but I haven't got a braver.
Let's make another trip over to the king cake. Shall we? When we come back, we have some audio of a G League coach losing his mind on a referee in the G League. It is hilarious, and we have we bleeped it appropriately. That's coming next. Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
The officiating definitely went right for Grand Rapids. That was as unprofessional as an officiating performance. And I hope you tweet this out and tag the league, because that was embarrassing. Matt Rafferty is a That being said, we have to be so much better at the end of games. We can't blow a 21-point lead with 12 minutes to go. However bad and biased and unfair and illegal and cheating the referees are, we have to be better closing games. And so that's the way I feel.
Well, no one's going to top that.
Chad Beaufort?
Buford.
Chase Buford?
Former G League head coach, probably.
Chase Buford? Good God, man. He called him an effing clown?
By name! By name, he called him an effing clown.
My experience in minor league pro basketball, there are some of those guys out there.
Really? The clown shows? Big old shoes and a funny car?
I hope you tweet this out and tag the league.
There was a guy in the Global Basketball Association named Charles Stamper. And Charles Stamper, during the game, told our coach, Matty Tao, I'm going to fight you after the game. He said, the moment this game is over and you come out of the locker room, I'm going to kick your ass. And I was like, what? He's like, you heard me. I'm going to kick your ass.
It pains me to no end that you, of all people, have not seen Semi-Pro. Because it's not, whether it's a great movie or not, it perfectly captures all of that. You have to see that movie.
Yeah, I lived it, man. I lived the talking pile of towels when our coach got ejected. And we put the walkie-talkie in the pile of towels, and he stood outside on scaffolding and called the place.
You need to see Semi-Pro. I'm going to make you watch that movie on the plane to Phoenix.
Thanks to Ben Ryder, Jim Deshays, Vincent Goodwill for joining us today.
Thanks to Jay Zawoski.
Thanks to Jay Zawoski for joining us also with the Blackhawks stuff. So we still got 15 minutes before the deadline during transition with McNeil and Parkins. We may have some more of that information for you. Rick Camp was on the board, an executioner. Ray Diaz was in the back doing what he does. We're going to do this full broat tomorrow. Also, we're going to be here for the Lawrence Holmes Show. Thanks to Lawrence for allowing us to sit in and have this time with you. He's got another full one tomorrow. We're carrying both Bears press conferences live in our show. Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy.
Pace at 9.
Nagy at around 10:15. Yeah. We hope that they're on time. We will handle all accordingly. But you're not going to miss a minute of their appointment with the assembled media down at the Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. When we come back, McNeil and Parkins. It's like old times.
Yeah. Transition next on the Score.